कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Videhi. Give direction. Namaha. My obeisances. Tubhyam. Unto you. Karmasu. In duties. Idya. O worshipful one. O worshipful one. Atma Shaktishu. Within our working capacity. Yat. Which. Kritva. Doing. Iha. In this world. Yashaha. Fame. Vishvak. Everywhere. Amutra. In the next world. Cha. And. Bhavet. It should be. Gatihi. Progress. Translation for Prabhupada, His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chala Prabhupada ke. Translation. O worshipful one, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Purport. Brahma is the direct recipient of Vedic knowledge from the personality of Godhead. And anyone discharging his entrusted duties in disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. The disciplic succession from Brahma is called the Brahma Sampradaya. And it descends as follows. Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, Madhva Muni, Purna Prajna, Narada Muni, Padmanabha, Narahari, Madhva, Akshobhya, Jayatirtha, Jnanasindhu, Dayanidhi, Vidyanidhi, Rajendra, Jayadharma, Purushottama, Brahmanya Tirtha, Vyasa Tirtha, Lakshmipati, Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodar, and Sri Goswami and others, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, Narottama Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaur Krishnas Babaji, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. This line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material. But both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuhuvan Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vidamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavati Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada has given the entire disciplic line in this purport. So when we read the names of these great acharyas, I shiver in fear to be a preacher in this parampara, because when we hear the katha as well as the narration about the lives of great Acharyas and Goswamis. And both their wisdom as well as the content of good work that they have done. I feel that, you know, at least my limitations of my body and my mind and my intelligence, the reach I have is insignificant. Because the contribution they gave, I was reading one purport of Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, Yukta Hara Viharasya. The purport Prabhupada writes, the Goswami slept only 2 to 2.5 hours every day. And sometimes they didn't get that much also, he says. So and then he says, as far as sadhakas are concerned, they may sleep up to 6 hours or something like that, Prabhupada writes. So they had conquered eating and sleeping and recreation, everything. And when it comes to Krishna service, they were tireless, practically. So, here in this purport, Prabhupada highlights two the differences between the material lineage and spiritual lineage. Before we come to that point, I noticed in the translation. The translation here says, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. You'll see, the Vedic life is a very responsible life. There is responsibility and there is detachment, and there is time for both. Just like when one is accepting the role of a king, like here Manu is accepting responsibility as a king. And you will also find that there is another responsibility for the kings when they have, you know, done their rule properly. That responsibility is detachment. After they cross 50, Panchasya Urdhvam Vanam Vrajet. So at that time, that becomes the responsibility, detachment. So when one is given a task, they should be enthusiastic to execute work. And then when one has completed the work successfully, then one should not become attached to the good project done or good work done. You'll find in this world, anyone who creates anything, they become attached to it. Somebody creates a baby and they become attached to the baby. Somebody writes a book, they may become attached to the book. Somebody may do something and they become attached to that. And one should be detached. But here, Manu Maharaj is in a stage where he is accepting responsibility. So, that is why he is telling here that for executing my duty, but give me something within my working capacity, he is saying, which is not the limit of his surrender, certainly. Because he doesn't want to take something beyond what he can, like we say, don't try to eat beyond what you can chew. Sometimes when the prasadam serving is done, people ask, is there second help or no second help? In some places they serve buffet and they say only one shot. You have to take everything in one shot, you are going to wind up. Then people generally tend to take more than required on that plate. And then when they start eating, they are unable to finish beyond 1/3. Then it becomes too much. So they don't want to waste prasad also. At the same time, you know, they are unable to eat also. It is better to throw it than put it in the belly, they feel. It will create more trouble. So, sometimes similarly, we also become enthusiastic to take up more than what we can do, and we may do the work half-heartedly, due to which we may earn the displeasure of many Vaishnavas also. Just like in Tirupati, it's a very common sight. There are many barbers, you know, competing to complete as many head shave as possible. So he calls one fellow and does little bit, and then he keeps him aside, and then he calls another fellow. And because once you do little bit, then nobody can touch him. So like that, they do little, and then when there are 2 dozen people all screaming, he will find out who is screaming the most, and he will call him and finish him. Don't shout too much, and then he will shave him and say. Similarly, when we also, in our life as devotee preachers, we have experience, you know, there are so many demands on us from so many devotees, from juniors, from equals, from seniors, from more seniors. And then we also keep weighing which one is important, which one is more important, and whoever screams the most gets the work done. Yeah, isn't it? So that is why it's not wrong to make an estimation of our capability and then take up something which we can chew, which we will be able to successfully complete and bring pleasure to our superiors. So that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next, he's saying. So, generally, those people who are not very far-sighted, they only look for bodily pleasures, the grass pleasures, being very selfish, generally in this world. But those who are more wise amongst the common masses, they know that the body is perishable. It will be finished in no time. Just like we say the difference between prayas and shreyas. The prayas is short-lived and the shreyas is a long-term goal. Like a brahmana means a person who can climb on the top of a tree and he can see far away, far, far distance. What is going to come in future? He is not seeing something very immediate. The meaning of the word asura means, asu means immediate, ra means raman. Asura means one who wants immediate pleasures, is called asura. Whereas brahmana, that's why Prabhupada compares brahmana and kripana in many places. Brahmana means one who is far-sighted. He always thinks about the far-reaching consequences rather than thinking of the immediate thing. So such people, the kings, but they understood that I should act in such a way that will bring good for me, good for the people in general. It will bring pleasure to the acharyas, superiors, the brahmanas who are guiding them. So they always thought about all-round welfare. And that also brings fame and reputation to the entire lineage. So you will see in the Shastra, there is a some amount of importance given to the lineage also in the Shastra. Although it may be a material lineage. For example, there is one verse in Bhagavatam which says, Vidura was born from the body of Vyasadeva. So he was not an ordinary person, it says. So somebody born from the body of a great soul is also considered a great soul in that particular shloka. Vidura is born from the body of Vyasadeva and he was very powerful, it says like that. In the same manner, sometimes we glorify Bhagavan Saraswati Thakur is a ray of Vishnu, who was the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was a very great personality. He brought about a miraculous transformation in the society. So, Krishna also addresses Arjuna as Kaunteya, hey son of Kunti. Your mother was so tolerant, so you also, Tamsi Tikshasva Bharata, you also tolerate. That was only he says, no, Kaunteya, Matras Parshastu, that only he says this. So, similarly, another verse, you may say Bharata. So, whichever matter is being spoken in context, in that time Krishna may remind Arjuna of some of his ancestors, superiors. By remembering those superiors, you can derive strength from those superiors by remembering them and praying to them. And also you can remember your glorious lineage. Just like Dhruva Maharaj was told by Swayambhu Manu, Nas matat kula uchitam tata. And then he's saying, what you are doing is garhitam. It's an abominable act of killing the yakshas wholesale. You come in a lineage of very great mahatmas. Nas matat kula uchitam. It is not uchit according to your kulam, he says. So that is attaching importance to your great kulam. If you are coming in a great kulam, you also have to behave in a great manner. You cannot afford to behave in a way that brings a blemish on your lineage. So, all of us in our lives also, we can see that there is some amount of bodily consciousness which can be dovetailed in Krishna's service for purification. For example, somebody comes in a good family, if he indulges in abominable action, and there is some moment of fear to engage in abominable action because one comes from a good family. There is local lajja, we call it. There is fear of the public, there is fear of public opinion, of the degradation of the family name, family reputation, about which Arjuna also speaks in the beginning of Gita also he speaks. So, in this way, the Shastras talk about connection to the family lineage. If one is coming in a glorious family, a great family, there is appreciation given. But there are three types of births explained in the Bhagavatam. One is a birth by the father, which is seminal birth. Then there is second birth, which is a dvija. Dvija means the second birth, which is given at the time of when a person is given the janayu and Brahman Diksha, when one is given. So, in Indian tradition, you will find children even at the age of 5 or 6, they get the Yajnopavita Dharanam. They get that. Of course, nowadays, sometimes people put at the age of 18 or 20 also. But they give that. So, what is the meaning of that? Janmana Ajayate Shudra Samskarat Bhave Dvija. So, then that means parents agree that our child will do all the sanskaras. So, sanskaras are purificatory ceremonies. When one accepts the Pratah Sandhya Vandan, similarly Madhyanika Sandhya, Sayam Sandhya, Tri Sandhya they do, Gayatri Mantram, they chant. And also they adopt principles like, you know, taking shelter of a guru in the Gurukula. Like Ajamila section, you will find many good qualities of Ajamila. Prabhupada explains there. He was a Shuta Sampanna, he was a Dridavrata, he was a Sadachari. Like that he says many qualities of Shilavan. So those principles are adopted by a boy who is accepting sacred thread, and he agrees to live life by the Brahminical principles. That's the second birth. Then there is also another third birth for performing sacrifice. There is another type of initiation into the sacrifice also given. But all these three births are considered inferior to the spiritual birth. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmani upasamashrayam. So here in this verse it says spiritual guru is one who is shabde pare cha nishnatam. He is an expert in two things, in the Vedic literature and in the understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in both these things. Somebody may be a very learned scholar in the scripture, but he may not have any understanding of the personality of Godhead. So, Guru, Vaishnava Guru is one who knows the common, who knows the purport of the whole Vedic literature, the essence of the Vedic literature. And he is a Saragrahi also. And he also knows the personality of Godhead in all his different futures, forms and futures, and in his different expansions, in his different energies. All these things are known to him. And his different principles, like the Lord's nature, Lord's characteristics, all those things are known to him. So, Shabde Parecha Nishnatam Brahmani Upasamashram. If you read the purport to that verse, it is explained that the life in the material world is very challenging for every conditioned soul, because the conditioned soul is constantly being allured by Maya in this world. So the spiritual master is one who should divert the attention of the conditioned soul from his absorption in Maya to absorption in Krishna. He has to turn his face towards Krishna, lift his face up. Like a thief in a jail can see the mud in the ground, or he can see the stars in the sky, isn't it? So, Guru is one who makes the conditioned soul, he lift his vision from petty pleasures of the material world to the spiritual bliss of the spiritual world. Because the contact with matter is pain-producing, isn't it? And the contact with Krishna is bliss-producing. But in initial stages, it's not very easy to realize that. Just like if I show you a, you know, 500 rupee note, and the chocolate in the other hand. The children generally will choose chocolate. Immediately they want it. This is Prayas and this is Shreyas. So, the Shreyas is not very easily accessible. Just like, you see, when Rukmini's marriage was to be held, you know, Shishupal and Jarasandha and all such vicious kings, they had already arrived at Kauntinyapur and they were available in the vicinity. Whereas Rukmini did not want to marry any of them. But she was aiming at Krishna, who was in Dwaraka. So similarly, we have to, following in the footsteps of Rukmini, we have to aim at Krishna, who is far away in our conditioned stage. Krishna is far away for us. Whereas the Maya is available to us very easily accessible. So we have to move Maya aside, then we can see Krishna. And that is just like in computer, you say, you know, send to back, bring to front. So bring Krishna to front and send Maya to back. Like that we have done that. How can we do that? That is made possible by Guru. Because Guru is the one who catches the hand of the disciple and lifts him up to place it in the lotus feet of Krishna, offering the service of the disciple to Krishna's lotus feet. Guru is actually the connecting factor between the disciple and Krishna, because there is a big gap between the two. So, such a spiritual master, Shabde Parejanishnatam Brahmani Upasamashrayam. He has completely taken shelter of the Absolute Truth himself. And then he says in that purport, he says that if a guru does not elevate the disciple to the proper standard of spiritual platform, then the material desire seeds in the heart of the disciple grows bigger and bigger. And the disciple is unable to taste spiritual relish. Not having tasted the higher spiritual bliss, the disciple starts looking into the material world again in want of some material sense gratification. He again turns back. It's a very unfortunate situation. And such a disciple who becomes stupid in matter also poses a great burden on the shoulder of Guru also. Because of which Guru also can get bad dreams and everything because of the follower not properly following. So in this way, returning back to Godhead is a joint venture between by Guru and disciple. It's a collaborative program. So Guru and disciple both have to come together. The disciple has to commit to Guru and the Guru has to commit to disciple, I will take you back if you follow me properly. So it's like two arani sticks. When you upgrade them, then there is fire. This example is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, disciple and guru, when they come together, then there is enlightenment that takes place. So, when the disciple is enlightened, disciple is blissful. And they are seeing the bliss and joy of the disciple, and disciple surrender, obedience to guru, then the guru becomes very joyful also. And he goes ahead to reveal more confidential information from the scriptures, from the shastra. And then he gives more instructions for the disciple to execute. Then the disciple gets more knowledge, more wisdom and more service to do. In this way, the disciple also grows further and further. Seeing the disciple growing further in spiritual life, giving up all material attachments, giving up all improper behavior. Seeing that the disciple's intelligence is becoming fixed in Krishna's lotus feet, the guru becomes joyful also. In this way, the guru is able to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead, and that is considered the highest type of birth. That is why at the time of Diksha, Guru gives a name, new name to the disciple, which indicates that you have a new birth now. And he's given a new name. So Guru becomes the father, and the Shastras become the mother, and the Vaishnavas become the relatives. And then the other old relatives, they are seminal relatives. So they go to the background. They are not as important as the spiritual relatives for us. Because the spiritual relatives are those who remind us of Krishna and who inspire us to go back to Krishna. They are Vaishnavas who are spiritual relatives. And spiritual father is one who awakens our relationship with Krishna. Whereas the material father has done only the job of giving a material body to us. That even dogs and cats also do. They also give, you know, birth to puppies and, you know, cocks give birth to, chickens and, you know, all the animals and birds, they also give birth. The material body giving, they don't even know that they are going to give birth. They are into something else. When a male and female unite, their enjoyment is more, how to unite and enjoy pleasure. But in the course of doing that, something comes out. Another living entity gets a body in the course of that, ordinarily. So from a practical material point of view, seminal birth is considered condemnable and useless. At the same time, the Shastras have attached the importance to seminal birth also. Like for example, the Garbhadhan Sanskar, when it is done, that can sanctify the seminal birth. That can make seminal birth also pure and glorious. Because that is why Diti was chastised by Kashyapa, that you don't know, you have broken the scriptural injunctions due to which you invited two great asuras into your womb, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyapu. On the other hand, opposite of that is, if somebody performs Garbhadhan Sanskar properly, then they may invite a saintly soul to come and reside in the womb, and they may give birth to a very glorious personality. So, in the Vedic times, the kings were very anxious to have sons who are good sons. So, who is a good son? A good son is a learned son. A son who is a wise son. A son who, at least to begin with, he is obedient to mother and father. And then, he is obedient to mother and father. Better than such a son is one who does something selflessly for the society. Better than that son is a son who follows the Brahminical principles in his own life, and then who can live a pious life. And pious life means, protecting the cows, doing good for others, and worshipping God dutifully, going to temple. In this way, the kings also, there were many kings who were pious kings, but better than pious king is a spiritual king who has a spiritual awareness of the sambandha between Jiva and Krishna. Such kings are glorious devotee kings like Ambarish Maharaj, such kind of kings. So in this way, any parent would aspire to have a son who is a good son. Like Chanakya says, if somebody gains knowledge, but that knowledge does not lead to devotion, what is that knowledge like? It becomes simply a burden on the back of an ass. Or that knowledge is compared to a dog's tail, which is neither useful for covering the back or for driving away the flies. It is said. Such knowledge is useless. So, no king would expect a son who may have knowledge that doesn't come to practical help. So the kings expected that their son should become also a very ideal king, Rajarshi king, one who is subservient to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, one who is obedient to the Supreme Lord, one whose mind is constantly thinking of the welfare of the public, and one who leads a pure life, one who does not use the royal power to exploit women or exploit the innocent and poor, and one who will not collect taxes, exact the taxes from the public for intoxicating himself and abusing women. So the kings always prayed that they would have sons who would be very ideal Rajarshi sons, seminal sons. So it's not wrong for a king to aspire to have such a son like that, because ultimately his aspiration to have such a good son is to ultimately serve the world only, serve the saintly persons and serve the world according to the guidance of the saintly persons. So such seminal sons are considered glorious also. So, but because Srimad Bhagavatam is a Amalam Puranam, it very clearly shows the distinction between good seminal sons and bad seminal sons very practically. Like for example, Bharat Maharaj was one of the first sons of Rishabhadev. And Rishabhadev is telling, all of you, my sons, you are born from my heart, he says, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they are all obedient sons. And he himself became the spiritual master for all of them. In one sense, although they are seminal sons, they were all glorious devotees. Every one of them became very powerful. Some of them became Kshatriyas, some of them became Navayogendras, some of them became Brahmanas, like that. So, in this way, sometimes a seminal son may become an ideal son also. Such a son is considered a putra, otherwise is considered a mutra. Putra and mutra come from the same source, but putra is one who delivers the parents, considered a putra. But like Shanda and Amaraka, they were seminal sons of Shukracharya.
And in the Vedic times, there were people like Shukracharya who were officially appointed priests, which is considered not very glorious. The officially appointed priests are paid some remuneration. They are not considered that glorious as the Brahmanas or Unchavithi Brahmanas, who accept some grains fallen in the fields and they study the Vedas and they survive, or they live on charity. They are not officially appointed priest. So Shukracharya was officially appointed priest. So that's not considered glorious. So he's also a seminal guru, Prabhupada says. He's a seminal guru. Similarly, Shanda and Amarika were seminal sons of Shukracharya. So naturally, they were teaching economics and politics and, such kind of diplomacy and all those things they were teaching. They were not teaching how to go back to Krishna. That they did not teach because they were seminal sons. They were more concerned about their own remuneration. So, on the other hand, the ideal Vaishnava gurus, they are not seminal gurus. In the, I think in 11.1.5, 11th canto, 1st chapter, 5th verse, Prabhupada writes something very important in this. He says, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu married one wife first and then subsequently another one later, Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya. But he did not leave any sons, he says, because they may claim that I am son of Chaitanya. And then he may claim seminal birthright. So purposefully Lord Chaitanya didn't leave. And then similarly he says about Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu's seminal lineage, if you see, one son, and then subsequently there are no continuation. Similarly, he says Advaita Acharya Prabhu had six sons, and three of them turned to Mayavad. And then Achyutananda and the two others, Prabhupada says, they were devotees, but they also had, Achyutananda had only one son or something. Subsequently, the line didn't continue. And Lord did not want the seminal line to continue. He wanted the spiritual line to continue, he says. Prabhupada writes there. So, such birthright claim by the caste Goswamis is unacceptable, Prabhupada says. One time some Western devotees went to this Radha Damodar temple. And they came back to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, generally in our ISKCON temples we only have one deity, Radha Krishna, and there is a Utsava Murthy for them. But here in Radha Damodar temple we found many deities, all beautiful, big and small, different sizes. And Prabhupada said, yes, do you know why there are so many deities? The caste Goswami is coming in the line. They, those deities had their different temples and they also had different lands belonging to that deities also. Because every temple has every deity has a own temple and also lands connected to the temple from where they get all the yields to serve the deities, like the goshalas and the grains and everything, flowers and everything. But the caste seminal lineage people, they sold off all those properties to make money and they put all the deities in one place, in one temple. So that eventually over a period of time the worship of the deity shrunk and then their material lives expanded. And this you can see in the modern times also, in certain Brahmana families, the fathers are worshipping either Laddu Gopal, or they are worshipping some Vishnu's form, or Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman in their puja room. They had the puja peti and everything, they used to sometimes do abhishek and everything. I remember in our home we used to have this Navaratri puja, 9 days. All the deities they used to do abhishek. Almost it used to go for 9 or 10 days, each day almost 5-6 hours. But gradually over a period of time, those pujas were stopped. They didn't continue. As moved from village to town and town to city, as you move, life becomes busy. Even the Shraddha days, they used to fast till 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and the pujas would go for 5-6 hours. Then gradually the pujari started asking, tell me in how much time you want to complete the puja. And the people also say, can I finish in 4 hours? Then later on they said, in 2 hours? And then 1 hour? Later they said, can you just come collect dakshina and push off? Just take a dakshina and go, that's all. And that fellow is also ready, comes in a bike also. He also has a bike now. Earlier he has to come walking. They have a bike also, they collect dakshina and push off. In this way, the pujari receiving dakshina is happy and the person who is supposed to conduct shraddha, he is happy. He saved his time and he got his dakshina freely. And what suffers is the service to Lord. That suffers. You will see that. In this way, in Brahminical families, these things shrink. And sometimes the puja peti, you will find it, there are cobwebs in that. and the Lord is unattended, sometimes uncared for. You will find like that. It happens in film. Why? Because instead of the puja room, there is another big Guruji who has come in the main hall. It is big television. In front of which all the Dadaji, Dadaji, Nanaji, Nanaji, and then Papa, Papi, Mama, Mami, everybody sits. Everybody is sitting and very, with folded palms, they are watching all the different channels. So when material life expands, they have a big TV and the puja room shrinks. Another devotee's home, when I went, I saw there was a big altar in the main hall. I said, Prabhuji, you know, 2 years ago you had a TV, what happened? He said, TV is in the kitchen now, we use it for keeping hing and other items now. They don't care for TV. So the TV represents material life and the altar represents spiritual life, you see. So you will find in this way, in seminal lineage, you know, spiritual things shrink because it's done as a routine. Nobody serves the Lord out of love, with sincerity. That is why the spiritual line is a lively line. It's like a live wire. Spiritual line is like a live wire. And sometimes the railway line you have seen, there are some railway lines where the trains go regularly. And the other railway lines where no train goes. You have seen that? It is on the side. So seminal line is like that. Whereas this line, if you see, it's like regular train goes. There is regular practice, regular preaching. So Srila Prabhupada revived that type of spiritual line, and he emphasized about that. That's what Prabhupada is distinguishing between the two here, the spiritual line and the material line. But the material line is also considered glorious if the people continue the lineage gloriously, like he's asking here to Brahma, you know, that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Asmin and Amushmin, in this world and in the next world, how he can become glorious. Because the path of the Supreme Lord is a royal path. By following that path, you become glorious in this world also and the next world also. So, great kings like Manu, they are always guided by Brahma and other rishis. They never act whimsically. They never do anything of their own. And such lines are glorious. So in Bhagavatam, you will find one amazing thing. You know, the lineage, when the genealogical lineage of the kings is given, it will say, you know, this king begot 4 sons and then 6 daughters and then, you know, this son married with so-and-so and in her womb he begot 5 more children and then like that it will go on. Tak, 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 tak. Sometimes chapters you will find verse after verse after verse. And then suddenly they will put a break, nabaga, nabaga and all that will go on. And then suddenly you will put a break and say, and then his son was Ambarish Maharaj. And then you will find Shukadeva Goswami taking the video, zoom, you know, closing. Very closely we will go to Ambarish Maharaj, the next man. And there he will dwell for a long time. Why? Because he is a pure devotee, king. And it is worthy spending time with him, with Ambarish Maharaj, to know about his life. Because we have something valuable to learn in our life also, from his life. Ambarish was such a glorious king, devotee king. Similarly, you will find, and then again you will find, if it is a seminal lineage, he will go very, very fast. So and so, son, his daughter, like that, tuck, 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 it goes. It's seminal lineage. But as soon as somebody became a devotee, immediately, then there is a highlight put there. Correct, no? That's how, because Bhagavatam is a Paramahamsa Samhita. It is meant for the Paramahamsa. So the highlight is put only where somebody is a devotee connected to the Lord. There is some discussion about the Lord, about the devotee and the devotion service. Although devotion service, is performed by all the kings, every king has shown different types of examples reinforcing our devotion in our hearts. You know, the pujari from Vrindavan, Mukundata Prabhu had come to Pune. He was telling us from our Goswami literature one very interesting story of Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj's pastime is well known in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But he told another pastime from Ambarish Maharaj's life, which was very thrilling to hear. You know, Ambarish Maharaj had many queens, but he had one girl wanted to marry him, who approached him. And Ambarish Maharaj said, "Oh lady, why do you want to marry me? I already have many queens and I have no time. I am already busy in service of the Lord in the temple. You know, if you marry me, you will not get my time. I have no time." She said, "No, no, I am aspiring to marry you because You are such a great devotee. And by taking your shelter, my life will become, you know, sanctified. Even if you don't give me time, there is no problem. I am ready to marry you, she said. So she married him also. And then the Ambarish Maharaj, one day went to the temple, he went to the deity preparation room we have now. Like we have this preparation of the plates and all we do. So he went to that room and he found already there was water from Yamuna kept ready. And he was shocked. The pot is supposed to be empty. How is the water pot full? He immediately asked the servants. They said the newly arrived queen, she only brought the water. And he said, so became angry with the queen. So he called for her and said, see, you should not touch any of this. This is my service to Lord. I don't want anybody to take away my service. So I will only bring water regularly. And then he told her, if you want to do service to the Lord, I will make one altar for you in your palace. Because he had given one palace to each queen. So he made one nice altar for her. He said, you do your worship there. And in the main temple, I will do the worship here. So then she agreed also. She said, I just thought I will assist you. He said, you can assist me there, not here. This is my service. So they had a competition. Then she was doing there. So one day when Ambarish was preparing himself for the worship, that day, night, the Lord came in the dream and said, Ambarish, you think you are worshipping me very wonderfully. But if you really want to worship me nicely, you should go to your newly arrived queen. Just see how meticulously she worships me, the Lord told him. And Ambarish was stunned. So then he went to her palace and spent hours and hours seeing how she had stitched the clothes for the deities, how she had cooked for the deities, how she had done alankar in the altar and everything. And seeing this, all other queens, they became insecure. Hey, we are all older queens. He never comes and spends time with us. He is always going and spending time with this new queen. Then they wanted to know the secret. Why he is paying so much attention? Then they came to know the secret. Then they all demanded, we want one altar also in our palace also. So he gave them all one altar and all of them started meticulously worshipping. So in this way, Ambarish Maharaj's glorious devotion service is spoken, he was selling. So he was narrating this pastime when he came to Pune. So, in this way, why the Bhagavatam puts highlight on such kings? Because it is worthy for everyone to learn. So, in this way, we can take seminal lineage examples also, in case they are very, very glorious. We can say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son is Bhaktivinoda Saraswati Thakur, like father, like son, we can say. But it is not always true, like father, like son. Just like the mango, if you see, if it remains connected to the tree, it becomes very powerful, becomes a ripe mango. But sometimes the mango falls off. So one side is orange, one side green. It's like that. It's not a proper fruit. Similarly, you find in the seminal lineage, many times children are born, like Vena was born to Anga. He never represented his father at all. But the Brahmanas felt, because the lineage has been great lineage, so they churned the body and brought out Prithu and Archi out of his body. So, out of the two, if importance has to be attached, the importance should be attached to the spiritual lineage. So, Prabhupada is saying that here. He says, the line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material. But both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So, the material succession also is supposed to ultimately lead people to this supreme goal. Prabhupada is talking about one family, Singhania family in India. In their family, they are very, very rich people. Stinking rich. So, they had crores and crores of rupees. But they had an altar in their home. And all the family members have to rise early in the morning and take a bath and come to the puja room to attend the morning Mangala Arati and worship of the deities, everything. To greet the deities in the morning. And in the evening, they used to have Rama and Katha and Mahabharata Katha in the evening. All the family members would come and sit. And daytime, they all would be busy with their own duties and everything, he says. And then that example, Prabhupada quotes to show how in traditional royal Indian families, you know, hearing the glories of the Lord, even the kings would do. And then going to the temple, just like Prataparudra sweeping the, road in front of Jagannath. So these things are observable in India because father, son, the subsequent son, everyone is supposed to do that. But sometimes certain sons became absorbed in material enjoyment and it was not continued. Then there is a breakage in the seminal lineage. But in the spiritual lineage also, it is a duty of every disciple to represent the Guru Parampara in an appropriate way so that the continuity of the Guru Parampara happens. Like in our Sampradaya, you will see the Shiksha is given a lot of importance because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated by one, what is his name? Bipin Bihari Gosai. So he took all his inspiration from Jagannathas Babaji. The Shiksha inspiration came from him. So, which is actually the live spiritual wire, as I told you. He got from there. And similarly, Gaurakrishnadas Babaji, you will see, you see, all these people, sometimes they had gurus when they were small children only, when they were small boys only. Because they were given Kula Guru, we say, no? Sometimes the so-called Vaishnava Kula Guru also may be there. In South India also people put this Shankar Chakra and they get Sri Vaishnava. But then the boys go to America and they get lost. But then when they meet ISKCON devotees again, the real spiritual substance is awakened. And then they feel real connectivity to Krishna. That is real. Then from the Shiksha they get from ISKCON, then only they become alive. So Gaurav Babaji also derived inspiration from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Whereas Bhaktivinoda Saraswati's Diksha Guru and Shiksha came from Gaur Krishna Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He took from there. And similarly, Srila Prabhupada also took Diksha and Shiksha from Bhaktivinoda Saraswati Thakur. Like that. But out of the two, the Shiksha is given a lot of importance for one reason, because the spiritual consciousness should be kept alive. That's very important. One should not take Diksha from a guru like a Kula Guru system. You know what's Kula Guru system, no? Kula Guru system means like parents might have become inspired by a particular guru and they got enlightenment in their spiritual knowledge. And they woke up in their spiritual life and they are progressing. But the children also should make progress in spiritual life, commit to 16 rounds and come to the point of spiritual awakening and feel their connection to guru, and then they should take. Because in Indian tradition, many families have become Kula Guru families. And the Kula Guru, you know, once in a year they go and meet the Kula Guru somewhere in the hills he is living, and just to bow down to him and give a donation and come back. That fellow is not affecting and touching and transforming the hearts and lives of the people by his sound vibration. So the sound vibration is the most important thing, Vani. Because even after the Guru's external body disappears, his Vani continues with the disciple. And the Vani is ringing in the heart of the disciple. The spiritual master lives in his sound vibration and the follower lives with him, it is said. So the follower lives with him how? Carrying the sound vibration of the Guru in his heart and constantly meditating on the instruction. Tad dhyayanta, pujayantascha, smarantascha. He says, you know, they were meditating, they were remembering and absorbed and focusing on the instructions, prachitas, what they heard from Lord Shiva. That is actually the spiritual parampara. So Prabhupada distinguishes it here and in many other places to highlight the importance of the spiritual guru's superiority over the other three births. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Rashi Mad Bhagavatam ki, aur Bhakta Vrinda ki.